They were starting here on Chav Tet Amud Aleph with the statement of Rav. Here we had just had before the statement of Shmuel, which said that Govha Shel HaMenorah was 18 Tfachim. And now we have the statement of Rav, which is Am Rav, Govha Shel Merah Tisha Tfachim. It's only 9 Tfachim. Eitve Rav Simi Barchia the Rav says, Even Haitalif Ne'a Menorah. There was a step before the menorah, Vashlosh Ma'alot, that had 3 stairs, Shaleha Kohen Omed Umeitiv Et HaNeirot, on which the Kohen went up, and when he had to fix up the Neirot, Neirot meaning the receptacles that held the oil, when he had to be Meitiv Et HaNeirot, take out the old wicks, replace the oil, he used to go up on this small step stool in order to fix the menorah and take care of the Neirot. If that's the case, it's only 9 tefachim high, why is he going up on a step stool to get on top of the menorah to the Neirot? Only makes sense that he has a step stool if the menorah is higher than that, or higher than the 9 tefachim. So he says back to Amalei, Simi at? Is that you, Simi? Are you really asking that question? Kika amino misfata kanim ulamado. I'm talking about that, I'm talking about from the kanim and upwards, that is 9 tefachim. If you look at the picture, you can see that based on the calculation that we did yesterday, for Shmuel's calculation, you have the base and the perach, which are 3 tefachim. Then you have a tefachim chalak, you have 2 tefachim that are blank. Then you have a tefach, in which there's a gviya kaftor and perach. Then you have another tefachim that are blank. And then you have the first kaftor, which the kanim come out of. But in order to do that, you have 3 plus 2 plus 1 plus 2. Right, that's 5, 8, and then 9. So you have to include this kaftor to get 9. If the total is 18, then you have to go above the first kaftor. So when he says, mi tzfata kanim ulamalo, means from above the kaftor and upwards, is 9 tefachim.
Is that different?
That would be the same as Shmuel. It just, when I would have thought it was Misfat Kanim Olamala, I would have thought it would come up below the first kaftor. But to get the 9 tefachim, based on the measurements that we have, it would be above the first kaftor. That's the menorah, and the height of the menorah. Here we have Shmuel saying it's 18 tefachim, Rav saying 9, but not disagreeing, just giving it the measurement from the halfway point, basically, on the menorah, and saying that from that point upward it is 9 tefachim. Tiv, vaperach, vanerot, vamelkachayim zahav, hu, michlot zahav, my michlot zahav. What does it mean that the Zahav was used up? Am Ravami, Shekilato l'chol Zahav Sakur Shel Shlomo. That it used up all the purest gold of Shlomo. To Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Eser Minorot Asa Shlomo. Shlomo made 10 Minorot. Chol Achat Chvayachat Hevila Elef Kikar Zahav. Each one he put 1,000 Kikar talents of gold. Yichnisu Elef Pi'amim Lekur. And he put it through the cauldron, the smelting process, 1,000 times. Ve'midu Al Kikar. And then it resulted in 1 kikar, 1 talent's worth of pure gold. So he went from 1,000 down to 1 to get that purest form of gold. Ini, is that really true? V'aktiv, v'ak Shlomo, melech v'chol klei meshkeh, melech Shlomo, zahav, chol klei beit ya'ar, levon zahav sagur, ein kesev nechshav, b'mei Shlomo, l'm'uma. So here it says that in his palace they had the drinking vessels were made out of gold, and all klei beit ya'ar levanon, and all of the utensils used in his summer home up in the north, where Zahav Sagur were made out of this pure gold. And you just said before that there was all the gold, pure gold was used up for the menorot. And it says there was so much gold, or gold was so plentiful in the time of Shlomo, that silver was considered to be worthless at that point in time. Obviously today we have a different story, where silver is starting to exceed the increase in value of gold. But the silver in his time was next to Enochshav in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. So Gemara says, Zahav Sagur Kamrinan. We say, we're talking about that pure gold. So I'm not sure. The Gemara's answer is one of two things. It's either that the utensils mentioned here are made out of Zahav, even though the clay Beit HaYar are made out of Zahav Sagur. But basically, we're not talking about all gold was gone. We're talking about that purest form of gold that was gone. And I'm assuming that the answer, or should include, that was it. The purest form of gold was gone, including all the kelim that he made. The 10 menorot, plus the kelim that he had in the palace. Between them, that finished off all the pure gold that was to be had. In the purification process, is there such a drop in the impurities that you end up going from 1,000 to 1? The menorah of the Beit HaMikdash exceeded the one of Moshe by a dinar zahav. The type of dinar zahav that we're talking about here is a kord din yankni. That's according to Rashi's gear, so kord din yankni. They put it in 80 3 times into the kuor, v'emidu al kikar, and that purified it to the point that it went to the proper amount of 1 talent, the 1 kikar's worth of zahav. So now you have here a purification process which begins with 1,000 kikar zahav, ends up with 1 after going through 1,000 times. Roughly, if it was on a linear basis, that would mean that you're losing a kikar each time. You're losing 999 kikarim for going through 1,000 times. So that means each time you put it through the furnace or the cauldron, it loses a kikar worth of zahav. Here, they had 1 dinar of kurkanaikdi left over, and they'd put it through 80 times to get it down to from there to a kikar zahav, to lose 1 dinar. The answer is the obvious answer, which is that I said, well, if you assume that it's linear. Obviously, the answer is that it's not linear. The relationship came into koi koi. Once the gold is purified, then less and less impurities come out. And it's an asymptotic line that as you come down, there's less and less impurities that are leaving the process. So in the beginning, you probably lose a lot more. And as you get to the end, you're losing less and less as you get there. So here, where it was already purified, that process only required 80, that required 80 times just to get a dinar out. Whereas in the beginning, I'm sure the first couple times take out a lot more. And it's not a linear relationship. Right now, the Gemara says, Amar Rab Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amar Rab Yonatan, Mai dichtiv ala menorah ha-tehorah. Why is it called the menorah ha-tehorah? She yardu ma'aseha mimakom tehara. Because its shape, its form, its plans came from a place of tahara, means min ha-shamayim. Ela me'ato, if you want to learn that way, ala shulchan ha-tehor, she yardu ma'aseha mimakom tehor. You can say the same thing about the shulchan, which is called the shulchan ha-tehor. Let's say by the shulchan that also the plans, the image of the shulchan came in Hashemayim. Ela tahor, michlal shehu tamei. The reason it says tahor by the shulchan is to tell you that the shulchan is tamei. Hachanami also here by the menorah is to tell you that tahorah michlal shehi tameya legabeha menorah. Then always that it has to be purified because it can become tamei. So now bishlama hotam over there by the shulchan that makes sense. Kidereish lokish daamer reish lokish might ichtiv al shulchan atahor michlal shehu tamei. That by the shulchan is teaching you that the item or the utensil, the shulchan that's used in the mikdash, is tahor because it can become tamei. Well, why would there have been a safek, or why would you have had a havamina that it cannot become tamei? That's because of the principles of tuma. Because it's a kliyetz, asur lanachatu. It's a wooden utensil that is made to stay stationary. And since it's stationary, it's not mekabel tuma. A wooden utensil that's too big to lift, or not is normally left in place, does not have a din of kabbalat tuma. That is exactly what it is. Shulchan is a utensil that's very heavy that was left there and wasn't moved. It teaches you, it says in Chagiga and other places, that the Kohanim used to take out the Shulchan during the regel to show the Olei Regalim, the Lechem Apanim that were found on the Shulchan, and tell them, Re'u Chibatchem Lefnei HaMakom. See how beloved you are to Kodesh Baruch Hu. My chibatchem. What does that mean? What they're showing them the lechem apanim. What's the chiba? Okay, the Rabbi Shua ben Levi. The Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Nes gadol naseh belechem apanim. There's a great miracle in the lechem apanim. Siduko kisiduro. That when they took it off the shulchan, it was just as fresh as when they put it on. Remember that it's baked 8 days before. It's sitting on the shulchan for 7 days. They bake it on Erev Shabbos. They put it on Shabbos, and they don't eat it till the following Shabbos. To say that it came off hot like it went on, that was a nes. Shneamar. How do you know? This is a sum lechem cham biyom elecho. That's by David HaMelech when he's running away and he gets the nov, and it describes that the lechem apanim, or the kohanim tell him that the only lechem that we have there is the lechem apanim, and describes that lechem lasum lechem cham biyom elecho. Place on it lechem cham like on the day of its taking. So why was it hot or warm on the day of its taking? Because it remained fresh throughout the week. Ela hacha. Over here by the menorah, Torah michlal shu tmeya, ashi tmeya. Why do I need this Torah to tell me that by the menorah, that it's called Torah because it is or can become tmeya? Pshita. That's so simple. Because the menorah is kli matechet, you know, it's made out of solid gold. And we know by kli matechot, mekablim tuma. Kli matechet is the most stringent form of tuma. First of all, it doesn't even require a beit kibul. Even a flat piece of metal is mekabel tuma. But But certainly anything that's made out of metal is mekabel tumah. You don't have this principle of the kli eitz hasui lenachat that is applicable by the shulchan, that's not applicable by the menorah. Since it's not applicable by the menorah is going to be tmeah because it's made out of metal. It's kli matechet. There's no havamina to say otherwise. So why do you need the menorah Torah to teach you that it is mechal shei tmeah? Ella. So it comes to teach you she'adu ma'aseh mimakom tara. Must be that by the menorah Torah it's coming to teach you that the plans, the image came down from minashamayim. Tanya, Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Aron shel Eish, Shulchan shel Eish, Umenorah shel Eish yadu minashamayim, Ra'a Moshe v'asakimotam. These images came down minashamayim, Moshe saw them, and he made something similar to those images or to those plans, Shenemar, because it says by each of these kelim, concluding pasuk is, Ure'ei v'asei bitavnitam, asher ata mar'e bahar. Each of the three kelim, it says, Ure'ei v'asei bitavnitam, asher ata mar'e bahar, make like the image you saw on the mountain. Now, the truth is that the pasuk here is most likely there because there's not enough detail in any one of the descriptions in Parshat Truma to build the kelim. That's the problem that everybody has. The fact that the information that we have in Parshat Truma as to what the menorah looks like, you still couldn't build the menorah based on the information that's given there. It gives you broad details, it gives you a sense of what's there, even with Torah Shebaal Peh, even knowing the height, the 18 tefachim, and knowing yesterday we learned what the gvi'im looked like, what the kaftorim looked like, and what the prachim looked like. Even with all that, it's still hard to know what it looked like, because a lot of this is, call it sketchy, but not detailed enough to tell you exactly how to do it. Including, we talked about this yesterday, what was the shape of the base? What did the base look like? Was it a square, a triangle, a circle, octagonal? What was the shape of the base? That's what Yishonim discussed. Number two, the kikar zahav. Kikar zahav, what did it include? Did it include the neirot on the top? Did it include the other tongs and the other tools that were used for the menorah? That is machlokas Rashi, says all the kelim were included. The Ramban disagrees and says that only the menorah itself was included in the kikar zahav. Another issue, the one that David just mentioned to us, again, which was made problematic by Ktiv Yad of the Rambam, about whether the arms of the menorah are straight or whether they are circular, they're curved in nature. It came up because they found a Ktiv Yad of the Rambam in his own handwriting that gave a description, the Perush Mishnayot, of the menorah. Now again, it was a sketch. He says here in the Perush Mishnayot that he's going to write a sketch that is not the exact menorah, but give you a sense of the menorah. So after that, Rav Ariel, in giving the psak for the Machon HaMikdash, says that's exactly what the Rambam says, and that nobody in the world, and all the evidence, archaeological evidence, and all the other evidence that's out there shows that the menorah had curved branches. This one item that the Rambam came that shook the foundations of the world of the menorah, when they found that it had straight arms, the Rambam himself says that I'm just giving you a sketch in order to show you where the gvim are, what they look like. What is interesting about the Rambam is that when he made his gvim, they were the opposite of what we think. Gvim, instead of the open side being upwards, the open sides were actually downwards.
Is that an actual picture?
This is the actual Ktiv Yad of the Rambam. Here's Rav Kapach redid it. He did the sketch again based on the Rambam's original Ktiv Yad. The one that was found in the Rambam, if you look in your Perush Mishnayot, this is the one that's found actually in the Perush Mishnayot until they found the Ktiv Yad of the Rambam. That's what was there. And this is actually from a Chumash, very early Mikraot Gedolot, found inside of Rashi. That this is the menorah that's found in Rashi's Perush. What's interesting about that menorah being in Rashi's print is that Rashi is one of the few Rishonim that actually says that the menorah was made, the arms were balachson. Balachson means they were straight. They were on an angle. And yet, the picture that he shows there has a curve in the menorah.
We don't know who printed the picture.
Right. We don't know how it was printed in there, who added the picture later. It supposedly is miuchas to the inside the perush of Rashi. But again, it's interesting because Rashi uses the term alachson. The only ones are maybe sketchy archaeological things that are made up in the north, but they had 5-6 branches. They weren't necessarily replicas. Arch of Titus also. They're curved on Arch of Titus. There's a lot of other evidence up north in the shuls that they found. Things that menorah that were found from the time of the Mishnah, every one of them is curved. Finding this Ktiv Yad of the Rambam shook the foundation of the world of menorot. Why it became so important is because the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, was very makbid and drew a sketch of what he thought the menorah was based on the Rambam. The Chabadnikim are very makbid to have straight arms on their menorot, and they're the ones who were pushing against Machon HaMikdash, and they made it in a curved manner. That's where Rav Ariel wrote. He actually wrote in Haaretz. He had an interview, and he had in Mekor Rishon. He had an interview with him explaining why he gave a psak halacha for the Machon HaMikdash that he thinks that it should be curved, because he thinks, based on this Rambam, that it was just a sketch and not an exact replica of the menorah. And he says all other evidence points the other way. So therefore, they made it a curvature. All right, so because of those differences, why we mention this is because the last pasuk here that says, the reason that that's true is because with the information that's here, there's no way you could build a menorah. You had to have additional information. That probably meant a shon nivu'ah, the shon of when Moshe was up above, especially for the Ramban and even for Rashi, that the Moshe got the Mishkan because of the eagle. For Rashi, the Ramban says they built it anyway. He had to have some sort of nivu'ah. He had to see some sort of image up on Har Sinai. So over here, the Gemara makes a big deal about it, about these three kelim, which were difficult, that Moshe got a blueprint in fire that came down from the har and was shown on the mountain, which he saw and then he used. Again, I'm saying the most simple pshat is that there's not enough information. You need either nevuah or some sort of blueprint in order to make these kelim. Elamiato, if that's true, what are you going to do with the Mishkan? Vakamota to Mishkan ke mishpato asherita bahar. You're going to put together the Mishkan in the way that you saw it on the mountain. Ochanami. That means that the entire Mishkan, Moshe saw in an image. So hachok tiv mishpato. Over here, by the Mishkan, it says ke mishpato. I would translate mishpato as the layout of the Mishkan. How to lay out everything that is in the Mishkan. As Rashi says, hilchotav. Hatam tiv kitav nitam. Kitav nitam is their form, their shape, meaning the blueprint of the kelim. So the difference between them is what information was being conveyed through the image. Amar Rav Chir Bava, Amar Rav Yochanan, Gavriel chagur kamin piskia. Gavriel was wearing a gartel. Over here, as Rashi points out, you wear a gartel because when you're doing work, you want to get your tunic off the ground, so therefore you wear a gartel. Hayav era lo Moshe maseh menorah. And he who showed Moshe how to make the menorah, what it should look like. Dichtiv, and this the Gemara does in many places, whenever the Torah uses the term zeh, the Gemara assumes that the word zeh means that you can point to it. And that's what it means, bezeh maseh menorah. This is the way to make the menorah. The Torah is indicating that, or at least Chazal view that, is somebody's pointing to it. You're either Moshe is pointing to it, or here Gavriel is pointing out to Moshe what the menorah looks like. Tana de Beir Abishmal. Shloshah dvarim ayu kashim lo Moshe. There were three things that were so difficult for Moshe. Ad she'ra lo kadosh baruch hu betzbo. Till Hashem literally showed him these items. What are they? Be'elohim, menorah, which we just saw by v'zeh maseh menorah. Virosh chodesh, we just read this, parashat chodesh, which is ha'chodesh hazeh lachem. Ushratzim, menorah dechti v'zeh maseh menorah. Rosh chodesh dechti v'chodesh hazeh lachem. Rosh chodeshim, and why was Rosh chodesh so difficult? Because of the molad alavana. Molad alavana is tiny. The first visible part of the moon is very, it's not easy to figure out. It's not even visible. So how to know when the molad was? It was very difficult for Moshe. Hashem showed him. Shratzim, Tichtiv is Elachem HaTamei. Between the Sheretz HaTamei and Sheretz HaTahor was very difficult. And therefore Hashem pointed out to Moshe, which are Tahor, which are Tameim. V'yishomrim, Avi Elchot Shchita, that even the Elchot Shchita were given to Moshe, Shenemar, Bezeh, Asher Taseh Al HaMizbeach. This is what you should do on the Mizbeach. You remember we learned before, first of all, what is the Asiyah that's found in Parshat in Dvarim? In the Parshiot of Dvarim, it says the Asiyah is the Shchita. Rashi says over here, Bezeh, Asher Taseh Al HaMizbeach. What is the first action you do on the Mizbeach? That's Shchita. So Moshe also had difficulty with Shkita. What's so difficult about the Shkita? That Rashi points out is Hagrama. Where it is that if you go out, where's the area, that windpipe, that it's considered to be problematic, that Hagrama was what was kashe for Moshe, sections of the windpipe. I'm also mentioned that that's why the Chazal Dashin at Zekili Van Vehu, when the Bnei Yisrael go through the Yamsuf, the Midrash that's brought there is, that Afilu Shifcha Shalayam Ra'ah, in his Nivuah, V'hayu, roim et ha-shchina, and pointing at it. They were matzbim aleha. They were able to see the shchina and point to it. How do they know that? Because of zeh keli van vehu. That zeh indicates that they could see the Kodesh Baruch Hu and they could point to him. Again, Chazal, same type of midrash. You also have it at the end of the Gemara and Tanit. Gemara at the end of Tanit says that atid lavo, that the tzaddikim will sit around the Kodesh Baruch Hu kimechol, that there'll be like a circle around the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and it says that they will be able to point to Hashem. Everybody will be able to point to a Kodesh Baruch Hu because of the shchina that's there. And that's from the pasuk, which is zeh. I'm giving the most. Many times Chazal darshan the word zeh to mean that you can literally see it or point to it. And so now we're leaving the maseh menorah, moving on to the next piece of the Mishnah. This is going to begin our journey through stam, mezuzah, tefillin, and then tzitzit, which is that the next piece is about the mezuzah. Shtei parshiot shebezuzah makvod zu etzu v'afutilu katav achad me'akfan. Even one letter could be problematic. Pshito, of course, because it says uchtav tam, that it has to be ktiva tamah. That everything has to be whole and the way it's supposed to be. You can't have any mistakes in there. Why do I need a Mishnah to tell me that even Otechat is Makvan? We need it for the little piece of the Yud. This turns out to be a Machloket Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi says, what's the Kutzashel Yud? If you think of the image of a Yud, you have the head of the Yud, and then you have the piece on the right that comes down. That's what Rashi calls the Kutzashel Yud. Rabbeinu Tam says, and this is what you should see in any good Sefer Torah, that are Makpid for the Rabbeinu Tam, which most of the Poskim say we should be Makpid for the Rabbeinu Tam, Afresh Rabbeinu Tam, Dehu Rosho Kafuf. That is that the Rosho Kafuf means the top of the Yud, and therefore the Rabbeinu Tam believes that you put a line, a marking on the front of the Yud that extends, and you have pictures, I think most of you have pictures over here. Rabbeinu Tam says that, but down below, on the left side, there's a little marking that comes down. On the left side, that's the Rabbeinu Tam. You have other Rishonim that suggest it's the upper left corner, and therefore what we do, or most Sofrim will do, is they'll draw a Yud, like Rashi, of course, with the right handle coming down, and that's Surat Ot. And then it'll be Makri to put a line on the left side, both that extends on the top and the bottom. A piece that extends up a little bit on the top and the bottom on the left side to accomplish this Kotso Shoyut, to ensure that we have the Kotso Shoyut. Ba'anami Pshita. Of course that's Pshita. Of course you have to have the Kotso Shoyut. Now to be honest with you, it's a little more Pashut according to Rashi, who says that it's part of the Surat Ot. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, it seems to be that wouldn't have been so Pashut. I don't know why you've known it, but anyway, Ba'anami Pshita. Ella, Kivgi Idach, the Rav Yehuda Marav. We need it for the other member of Rav Yehuda Marav. The Rav Yehuda Marav called Ot She'en Gvil Mukafla Me'arba Ruchotei Psula. That you have to have a margin, you have to have white around all letters, basically, that they can't touch each other. Letters can't touch each other in order for the letters to be Kshirot. Amar Ashien Bar Nidbach Mishpeder Rav Yehuda Nikev Kochosho Hei Kasher Yirecho Pasul. What's interesting here is that we're going to have a series of Amuraim that have names that are actually words in Aramaic. Like here, Ashien Bar Nidbach. I don't know if it was the brick man, and I think Ashian means blackened the walls. The Ashian Bar Nidbach, Mishmei, the Rav Yehuda, says that if there's a hole in the hay, it's kasher. If it's on its leg, then it's pasul. What does it mean that tocho shel hay? So Rashi gives two interpretations. Tocho shel hay is the regel shibifnim, and yerecho would be regel yemanit. So the regel shibifnim means the left piece of the hay, the little piece, the extra piece of the hay that's there. If that has a hole in it, it's okay. Whereas if the right leg has a hole in it, then it's problematic. The second interpretation that Rashi gives is tocho ha-gvio v'chalak shbetocho. There's a hole in the gvio on the inside of the hay, then it's kasher. And if it's on the hay itself, I assume a yirecho means on the hay itself, then it would be problematic. So the difference, or what the issue here, Rashi points out in these cases, by the way, that this is only for tefillin. It's only manifests itself in tefillin. It's only an issue by tefillin. And then number two is before, when we said that that's bigvil, mukefet gvil, that applies both to mezuzah and tefillin. So the tocho shel hay, when we say the first interpretation of Rashi is that the hole is on the little leg versus the hole being on the big leg, the right leg, the understanding would be that hole would separate the leg of the hay from the top of the hay. So if the hole separates the right leg from the top of the hay, that's problematic because that causes a gap between the hay, and we're going to see that explanation in a second. The other possibility is that the hole is lower down on the right leg of the hay, and there it'd be okay. Whereas when it comes to the left side of the hay, where that piece of the hay is already separated from the rosh, then the hole over there won't present the problem, because it's supposed to be separated. So the hole won't present an additional problem. Zer l'dima farshle minei de Rav Yehuna. V'Rav Yaakov amar l'dima farshle minei de Rav Yehuda. So whether it was said in the name of Rav Yehuda or Rav Huna, nikev tocho shel hei kasher yirecho. When it comes to the yerech, that part, im nishtayer bo kashir ot kitana. If the hole on the right leg was low enough down that the rosh, the head of the hay, plus the right leg forms a small hay, then that's fine, kasher. Bimlav, if the hole is too high up on the right leg, where you just either have the head, or you have a head but it's a little bit of the hay, but not enough to make it the tzurata ot of a hay, then it'll be pasul. So it narrows down this psul of the right leg having the hole in it. Again, that sounds much more like the first interpretation that Rashi brought down. The second interpretation of Rashi is a little more difficult, because if there's a hole in the gevil on the inside, we do have a requirement that the ot be surrounded by gevil. If it has a hole there, then you don't have gevil.
What are you saying, the hole? An empty space?
Yeah, an empty space in the middle.
It's so literally a hole.
But there is a din, generally with holes in the parchment, that if you can run your kumus over it, and it won't catch and the ink will go into it, that a hole is not a problem in the parchment. So I don't know if this was a small enough hole, there wasn't an issue, or there was gvil around the hole. And that as long as there's gvil around the hole that surrounds the oat, that the hole is not problematic. Maybe that's the suggestion, versus the second statement, which is the hole is adjacent to the letter, where it prevents it from having gvil around it. And that's where it's pasul. So that might be the interpretation, the second interpretation of Rashi. And now the Gemara continues, agra. So again, another word, again these Aramaic words, agra chamua de Rabbi Ava, that he was the brother-in-law of Rav Ava. Ifsikale kara dehe, his, the leg of his hay in his tefillin broke off. Deha'am benikva. So this is how Rashi knows it's in tefillin, because the word am is only going to appear in tefillin, not in mizuzot. Mizuzot have shema v'yayim shema, and we know that that word does not appear there. The word am only appears in the tefillin, which have two other parashiyot, which are v'yayaki v'yecha and kol ha'bechor. So those, the word am appears there. He says to him, amalei, im mishtayer bo kishir ot kitana, if it has enough to be a small hay, kasher, then it's fine. Vim lav pasul. So the only question here is, does it have a tzurat ha'ot hay? Does a tzurat ha'ot hay, even if the right leg is a little shorter than it should be, then it's a kasher ot. If the right leg is too short, that it will no longer look like a hay, it doesn't have a tzurat ha'hay, then it's pasul.
You said the hole around the hay was at the bottom of the leg of the hay? It's not surrounded by gvil.
You're saying the nekev makes it so that it's not surrounded by gvil. Beit Yosef actually asked that question about why is it, if mukaf gvil is a demand on the oat, if you have a hole there, if you have a nekev, then you're missing mukaf gvil. So how could the Gemara say that that's kasher? Beit Yosef gives one of two answers. Either he answers like Rashi. Rashi said before, what's the din of mukaf gvil? Is that two otiot cannot be touching. That's what the din of mukaf gvil is. And therefore, over here, two otiot are not touching. A hole is not a chison on mukaf gvil. The other answer the Beit Yosef gives is that in the creation of the oat, in the creation of the tzurat oat, it has to be mukaf gvil. If the hole happens afterwards, that does not detract from the fact that the oat was created in a situation where there was mukaf gvil. Not that the oat has to always be in a state of mukaf gvil, but rather it has to be created in a state of mukaf gvil. The other possibility is the answer, I'd have to say that the nekev here means that it broke from the upper letter, not a nekev all the way through the parchment. A nekev in the oat, rather than a nekev in the parchment. Which also could be the difference between the two interpretations of Rashi before. I don't know, that the first interpretation means a nekev in the ink, in the writing, and then the second interpretation could be a nekev that means a hole all the way through. So now, the same question, Rami Bar Tamrei, Tehu Chamua de Rami Bar Dukule, I mean, he's the son of Date, was the father-in-law of the son of the palm. So he said, Ifskele Kara Devav, he also had the same problem where his bottom of his vav broke away. Instead of his hay, it was the vav that broke away. De v'yaharog. So there, from the word v'yaharog, where Hashem kills all the bechorim in Mitzrayim. V'nikva, it had a nekev that cut it off. So again, I think you have to assume here that the nekev means that it broke, the ink broke away. Ata the kamei de Rabbi Zera. So he brought this for Rabbi Zera. Zil aite yinoka delochakim lo tipesh. The famous solution, bring a child who is not too wise. De'ichakim, if he's too wise, then he'll mivin mitocha context. From the context in which it's written, he will understand what you it should say there, because if you read it as a yud instead of a vav, you'll end up with something that is blasphemous. So if he's too smart, he's going to know what it should be. But zelo tipesh is not a fool, meaning that he really doesn't know the difference in tzurat ha'otiyot between a yud and a vav. We need someone who could distinguish the tzurat ha'otiyot, doesn't understand the context. Ikar le v'yarog, if he reads it as v'yarog, then kasher. Ilo, if he does not, then he reads it as yareg, or yareg who, and a pasul. And then it becomes the areg, and it'll be pasul, meaning that then it sounds like Hashem, chas v'shalom, killed himself, or was killed, and therefore it's pasul. So you let the child read the word. We do that in general. If you bring up a child to look at a word, you're supposed to cover up the words before and after that, in order to prevent them from having context. That's number one. And number two is, this is a very important factor, it's not known by most people, that this test of a child that is not chakim and tabish, or Lobar Hakim, Lobar Tipesh, is only valuable if the Tzurat Ha'ot is there. You need the Tzurat Ha'ot to be there in order for him to read it. So here, it's a question if it's long enough to be a Vav. It's a difference between a Yud and a Vav. So you have have a tzurat old vav, we're just not sure if it's long enough that it's differentiated between a yud and a vav. So you bring up a child to tell you whether that is a vav or a yud. But it has the basic tzurat oath. If the oath is missing its surah, doesn't matter what the child reads the oath as, because it's missing the basic form of the oath. That's a big mistake that people make in bringing up a child to read it. If the child can read it, but it's not tzurat oath, it doesn't matter. That's not an oath. So it has to have the basic tzurat oath in order for the child to come up and make a difference in it. Here the question comes up a lot with yud and vav. If you have a short vav, does it become a yud or a dalet also that's very short on the top? Does that look like a vav? Do you have that by a resh and a dalet? If the dalet is not squared off in the back, does it make it into a resh? Those are places where if you're maybe missing a portion of the tzurat ha'ot that is not ma'akev, that you could have these problems, and then you bring up a tinok to read it.
Right. And it doesn't mean that it'll be interpreted as...
Right, correct. If he reads it as a yud, then it'll be yehareg, which will turn out to be that it's wrong. And that's what Rashi says. If the kid's too smart, he'll know that you don't say yehareg neged HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You only say v'yarog, that Hashem took that action, not that Hashem is killed. So now, Umar says, Amar Yehuda Amar Rav. So this is one of the most famous Gemaras. V'sha'a shalom Moshe l'marom. Matzol HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheyoshev v'kosher ktarim la'otiyot. When Moshe went up to Shamayim, he saw that Hashem was placing crowns on the otiyot. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, mi me'akev al yadecha. Who are you doing this for? Why are you putting all these ketarim? Amar lo, adam echad yesh atid liot besof kama dorot. Many generations, as may as one individual, be'akiva ben Yosef Shemo. Rabbi Akiva, shatid lidrosh akol kotz v'kotz. On every little mark, Tilin, tilin shel alachot. Piles and piles of alachot. Amar lo fanav, ribono shel olam, haroli. Show me him. Amar lo, chazor l'acharecha. Step back. Halach, v'yashav. V'sof, shmona shurot. He sat in the eighth row of the base medrash of Rabbi Akiva. V'lo yadea ma hein omrim. He had no idea. They're learning Torah, and he had no clue what they were saying. Tashash kocho. Moshe was weakened by that. Here he is, getting the Torah min ha-shamayim. A couple generations down, he looks at Rabbi Akiva, and he has no idea what they're talking about. They got to one point. Got to one item in the shir, and he says, Rebbe, what's the source for this? It's Alacha Moshe Misinai. There is no reason. It's a Mesorah from Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe saw that even though he wasn't able to understand what Rabbi Akiva was doing, nevertheless, he saw in the end that Rabbi Akiva's source for his Alachot were Alacha the Moshe Misinai. Obviously, it was something that Moshe had yet to receive. Otherwise, he would have known it was Allah the Moshe of Sinai. But now, something that he was atid to receive. Chazar Rabba lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar lefanav, Ribono shel olam, yesh lecha adam kazeh, v'ata noten Torah al yadi. You got Rabbi Akiva, what are you giving the Torah through me? You got a much better guy to give over here. So Amar lo shtuk, kach ala ma'ach shavah lefanai. Be silent. That's my decision. Amar lefanav, Ribono shel olam, heri tani Torah to, heri ani ischaro. You showed me his Torah, show me his reward. Amalo chazor la'achorecha, again, go back. Chazal la'achorav ra'ash shoklim basaro b'makulin, so that they were scraping off his skin with the rakes that are used by the butchers. Amar lefanav ribono shel olam, zu Torah, zu schara. The same gemara that's found in Samach Aleph Amud Bet by the Harugei Malchut in the story of Rabbi Akiva, where the malachim say, zu Torah, zu schara. Over here it says, be silent, this is what I wanted to do. Over there, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, be silent, otherwise I will turn the world to tohu vavohu. So this is the famous story of Moshe Rabbeinu going up to Shemayim. But what's important about the story is, and why it's relevant here, is the tagim, which are the crowns that are placed on the otiyot. So here, Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe about these tagim that have to be on the otiyot. And we have a Mesorah, Amarava Shiva Otiot Srichot Shlosha Ziyunim. Letters that require strokes that be put on them. And Elohim, these are the Shatnez gates. That is Rosh Tevot for the seven letters that get Ktarim, get Tagim on them. That's Shatnez gates. That the Nun that's in there is a Nun Pshuta, but a Nun Sofit also gets it. And the Tzadi Sofit, which is their gates, the Tzadi Pshuta also gets it. Where you put them on those items, the Rashi points out by the Shin that you put it on, it's on the Regel Malit, it goes on the most leftmost of the arms of the shin. And the ayin, it goes on the inner one, the smaller of the pieces, the left one as well. And the tzadi also goes on the left side.
It's always on the left side.
Yeah, it's almost always on the left side. We're going to see in a second that there's something comes up that Mark Lucas, Rashi, and Tosafot about where it goes. Alright, so that's the Dagim. As far as how the Dagim looked, Rashi says, Echad notel yamin, one shoots out to the right. Echad notel the small, one shoots out to the left. Echad is yashar, the middle one is straight up. You can see that in the Tosafot, in the third picture that Tosafot brings of the Zion. Tosafot brings two other pictures of what these Dagim look like. The first one, which are one, two above, and then one below. And the other one that says three, which are straight up. So these are different types of tagim or views of the tagim. The last one of those three being the one that Rashi promotes over here, the tagim which we generally see, that type of tagim, either a longer one in the middle, the two ones on the short on the side are a little shorter, and go out on an angle. That's technically how our tagim are done. And he just mentions over here that the totafot, in the word totafot in our tefillin, the word tet is shatnez gates, so they have ziyunim on them, they have tagim on them. The shimusha rabba, which is the source, it's an early work that has some Tanaic attribution to it, probably is not a Tanaic work, has a Deah there that mentions that there were five Tagim on the tets that were found in Totafot. There was three on one side and two on the other side. And therefore there were five, and Rabbeinu Tam over here says, that it's a big mistake. That it's only three, the regular Tagim that go on the Tet, and these extra Tagim are not relevant or not necessary. In addition, the Shimushi Rabbah has its separate pair of tefillin, which we'll get to. There's Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, and the Shimusha Rabba tefillin. The Kabbalists usually wear them by mincha time. They put on their Shimusha Rabba tefillin. But he also has a set of tefillin that are different than Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. Also, the word ziyunim, which is interesting here, means strokes. The word zayin, clay zayin, means a weapon, a sword. If you take a letter zayin, I was just speculating about this, that if you turn it upside down, it looks like a sword. You have the handle of the sword and the pointy part. Maybe that's where clay zayin comes from. And these strokes here, the tagim, that look like a zayin. Just mention that we also, our tagin, are thin, and then they make it a little thicker at the top. Because of that, they make it wider. Not all sofrim do that so well. Sometimes just a stroke. But a lot of them make it a little ball or something on the top that makes it a little thicker. Rav Ashi, chazino lo l'sifrei davkani d'bei rav. I saw the sofrei, or whether it's the sfarim, or the sofrim, who are very particular in bei rav, in the basement of rav. The chatri hul the gagi the chet. They make a roof to the chet. V'talo le dekarei dehei. And they used to hang the kare, that little foot of the hay. So chatriu, they gage the chet, they make a roof over the chet. Klomar, chayhu, romo shalulam, that Hashem lives in the heavens above. And that's because the word chay, chet, is from the word chay, and therefore Hashem lives above. So now Rashi, if you look in Rashi, you can see a picture of Rashi's chet. Rashi's chet is kein choter kazeh, the gagosha chet, like the roof of the chet, which is a flat roof. Klomar, chodesh brochu chay bishulchein romo shalulam chet hainu chay. That's why Rashi learns it as a flat top. On the other hand, if you go to Rabbeinu Tam, disagrees with Rashi, and this is the way that we make our chetz. He says that the chet here is kmo chatarta de gamlo, like the hump of a gamal, de b'amsa kazeh. And he says that I'm supported by the Gemara in Shabbos. Gemara in Shabbos says that in order to be chayav k'tiv on Shabbos, you have to write two otiyot. And there, the Gemara says you can make two otiyot through erasure. How do you do that? If you erase the gag shel the chet, you'll have two zayin in there. You'll have two zayins there. So that's what Rabbeinu Tam says. Look, you can see that I have two zayins, and then I have a roof like that, a hump of a gamal on top of it. That hump of the gamal makes a chet. And that's why I think the chet is made. Right. Not as easily, but yes, you could. I think that generally some of the Sephardi Sefer Torahs have a chet like Rashi, whereas the Ashkenazi Sfarim have the chet like the Rabbeinu Tam, but there is a machlokas, you should know. One of the differences between the Beit Yosef, if you have Beit Yosef tefillin versus Arit tefillin, is how the chet is made. Is the chet made up of two zions with a hump of a gamal on it? Or is it made up with a zion and a vav that are put together with a hump of a chet on top of it? That's one of the differences in the ktav between the Beit Yosef and the Arit.
According to Rashi, what's the shadow of this Gemara?
I think that there's a roof goes over it to mean that you have the two legs, and the roof extends out on the right and left side, as opposed to it being just one big piece that goes over like a horseshoe. Instead of it looking like a horseshoe, you have a flat roof that extends across the two legs. I think that's what Rashi is differentiating from what you would have thought. Otherwise, you would have made either circular or a horseshoe like mechet. And if you squared it off, you would just make a squared out U rather than making the roof come across the top. And then kare de hay. What about the kare de hay, the leg of the hay? Kedivai mei Rabbi Yehuda nesia merbiyam b'maydechti bitchu b'Hashem adead ki b'ka Hashem tzur olamim. Amalei kol atoleh bitchano b'akadosh baruch hu harei lo machse b'olam hazeh olam haba. Whoever relies on a kadosh baruch hu, he will be his protection and he will be his rock in this world and the world to come. Amalei ana hachik kakashuli. I said, no, that's not my question. The question is maishnadechti b'ka. Why does it say b'ka ki b'ka Hashem? What does it mean? Bika. The word bit, that means with. What's with ka? K'tiv, v'lo k'tiv, ka. Why does it say, it doesn't just say ka, instead of bit-ka? Darish Rabbi Yehuda bar Yilai, Elu shnei olamot shebara kodesh baruch hu, echad behe v'chad b'yud. Shem created the two worlds, olam hazeh olam haba, and he did it with the letter hey and yud. V'in eini yodeim olam haba b'yud v'olam hazeh behe, olam hazeh b'yud v'olam haba behe. I don't know which one was made with which. Shomer, ilo todot ha-shamayim v'aretz, behi baram. This is the world that was created, behi baram, al tikri behi baram, ela behe baram. He created them with a hey. Avyomer, olam hazeh behe. This world was created with hey. Olam haba b'yud. Olam haba is made with the yud. Nei ma nivra olam hazeh behe. Yipnei shol domel achsadra. Kolorel, let's say, it's made like a portico that has an achsadra, which again we discussed yesterday. It only has three walls to it. The fourth wall is open. So that's the hey. The bottom is open. So anybody who decides that they don't want to keep the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, plenty of room for them to drop down below. Umay taima talya karei. So why did piece of the hay, that little piece on the left leg is separated out? Dihadar b'tshuva ma'ilile. So if he does tshuva, he can come up on the left side, the opening on the top left side, he can enter through there. V'layal b'hach. Go back from the bottom. What do you need? There's a big doorway at the bottom. Why do you need to go around the left? Lo mistayim milta. It's a person doesn't have good mazel with doing that. It's not easy to do that. Kedir Reish Lakish. Because what Reish Lakish says, Damar Reish Lakish ma'idiktiv. Im leitzim hu yalitz. Ula navim yitein chein. From that puzzle we learned that if a leitz wants to be a fool, then let him be a fool. And the anavim who are trying to be anavim, Hashem will give them chein. Bala teher misayinota. If you come to do a tshuva, Hashem helps you. Bala tamei potchim lo. If you go to do what's wrong, Hashem opens up the door below. So then if you balatayar misayinoto means that you need the help of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in order to do tshuva. So therefore to walk back through the bottom, which is the way you walked out, would imply that you don't need any help. The same way you walked out, you can walk back in. That's not true. You need the siyu of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in order to do tshuva, and that sees you need another opening, another way to get in, and that's what the left opening is for, is to bring you in. Now as far as the hanging left leg of the hay, you should just know that in a good Sefer Torah, they will write that as a yud, that inside of the hay will be a yud, an upside down yud. Check, a very good sofer. One of the ways to check is to see if he did that. He's makbid to make the inner leg of the hay as a yud, which I think is also interesting, that yud is the two doorways of Olam Hazeh, have the yud of Olam Haba sitting there. Those are the doorways, one to let you out and one to let you in, surround the yud of the hay. I think that's interesting if you're makbid to put that yud in there. Somar says, Umay taima itle tago. Why does it have a tag? What do you mean a tag? Ooh, what tag does a hay have? We said that the letters that have a tagim or shatnez gates. Hey, is not one of them. So this is a machlokas Rashi and Tosafot about what it is. If you look in the Tosafot, you can see this. The Rashi says that the tag of the hay goes on the upper left side. You can see that little piece that's sticking away from the hay. It's not attached to the hay. It should be attached to the hay. That little piece that's sticking up on the left side, that's what Rashi calls the tag. And the Rabbeinu Tam says, no, it's on the right side. The tag is on the right end of the hay, not on the left side of the hay. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu im chozer bo ani kosher lo kesher. If he does tshuva, I will put a tag, I will put a keter on his. I should read keter probably. Nikoshlo keter, put a crown on him. In the Gemara in Shabbos, it says tagar kuf kiyotzibo. The tag on the kuf is similar to this because it says my time adar kuf to gabi reish. Why does the tag of the kuf face the reish? Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Rasha. Im ata chozer b'cha ani aser l'cha keter kamoti. Rasha, if you go back, if you do tshuva, then I will make you a keter. Kuf has the same way because it's kuf reish shin. So kuf reish. How do I know that the tag of the kuf is facing the Reish? So it says over there, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Rasha, Imata Chuzer, the Rasha, which is representing the Reish. If you do Chazara, I'll give you a tag, like the, that's why, if you do that, that would suggest that the tag on the Kuf is on the left side, like the Perisha Kuntrus, that the Tosos mentions as a proof to the Perisha Kuntrus that it's on the left side and not on the right side, like Rabbeinu Tam. Ma Nivra Olam Ba Beyud. Why was it made Beyud? Menesha Tzadikim, Bol Mua Shubol Muatim, that the Tzadikim there. Yud, only a few people make it, the smallest amount make it there. Rimei Ma Kafuf Rosho. Why is the Rosh of the Yud bent? They all have their heads, they're walking around with their heads down. Because they see the other people that did better than them, other people that were greater than them, and they realize that they didn't do so well. Amrav Yosef, Hani Tarti Mile, Amrav. These two things, Rab said, Bisfarim, the Gabei Safrut, the Gabei Stam, and the Brito, notes disagree with him. Chada, we're only going to get to the first one now, and then the second one we'll get into later in the Gemara. Chada Adam Arav, Sefer Torah Sheish Bo Shtei Tayot B'chol Daf B'daf. Any Sefer Torah that has two mistakes on every daf, itakein, then you can fix that Sefer Torah. It's worthwhile to fix it. Shalosh Iganez. If there are three mistakes on every daf, you put it into Gniza. V'tanya to Yuftei, the bright that there's a problem from is Shalosh Itakein. Says that if there are up to three mistakes on every daf, then you do, or you are mitakein it. Arba, four Iganez. Then you put them into Gniza. Tana. Im yesh bo daf achat shleima, matzelot kulo. If you have one daf that has no mistakes on it, then even if all the other dapim have mistakes on them, then you don't have to worry. That one daf makes it worthwhile to keep this safer and to fix up this safer Torah. Okay, we'll stop over here.